What's up, everyone? You're listening to the Making Geeks Podcast, podcast for makers, dads, and geeks, episode 172. What's up, guys? It was a fun little way we're starting the show earlier with that little musical number. If you check my Twitter, or we'll repost it on the podcast Twitter, and you guys can kind of see it. Sing along. Maybe we should do like a whole musical episode one time. You know, every show at some point has a musical number. Here's the musical episode.
I think that would be super fun, but there was a tiny little delay. And yeah, but I just got back from a band audition. I wanted to start playing in the band at church, and I had to audition. So apparently I did pretty good. And so I just had like a cup of coffee, and I had my guitar in my lap, and I started playing it. And Donovan picked up his guitar that's behind him, and then Wes picked up his ukulele, and we just started rocking to the Hawaiian version of Somewhere Over the Rainbow. But it's weird because there was like the Skype delay. So it's like, let's just keep playing with everybody just a little bit off.
That was fun.
What are we going to play next week, guys?
Yeah, live.
Oh, we're going to be in Atlanta person. Next week. That's right.
Yeah, what are we going to play?
I think you can be on a stage at Workbench Con.
Hence why I said next week we can do it in person.
Oh, man, I had to bring a guitar.
Should play our theme song.
We're not going to have time to play a guitar. There's going to be no time to play a guitar at Workbench Con.
Probably not.
Let's build one there.
Yeah, all the people that I auditioned with, they were like, what kind of bass is that? I'm like, oh, I made it. They're like, what do you mean you made it? I'm like I made it. That's a verb that people are calling. Like, I didn't have a bass. I had wood, and now I have a bass. I made it. They're all very impressed. So, and it's a kit besides the body that I made. So, I mean, I didn't do a whole lot of extra work.
They don't have to know that.
Yeah, I was like, what kind of pickups are those? I'm like, you know, just some Chinese humbuckers. She's like, man, it sounded great. I'm like, sure. Yeah. Because I didn't screw it up. It's not that I did a great job. I just didn't screw up the kit. And then, yeah. So I want to make another one. While Bob and Anthony and I were in Chicago playing with Rob Scallon, or he played with Rob Scallon with his music store. And I already have version 2 in the works. So I want to make more of my own bass.
Based on something you saw in the music store, or just ideas you've had floating around?
A little bit of both. The one that I made is it's like three different bass designs like smushed together into one. And I want to make a bass that's very expensive and I've never been able to afford. So I just want to make it and have it look exactly the same and use all the same hardware.
What makes a bass more expensive than another one with what you're talking about?
The quality of wood, usually where it's made. Like some people, like there's lines of guitars that are made in Mexico or made in the Philippines, and some are made in Pennsylvania. So the Pennsylvania ones are so much better because they're made in the U.S., even though it's a lot of the same stuff. The electronics, you can get a bunch of different, like the electronics package, some can be active pickups, some can be passive pickups, some have a lot more metal. Some are like the classic Beatles looking big, beefy pieces of metal that are like arcing over the pickups. The bridge is different. So there's a lot of stuff that's different. But most of that stuff is made in a huge factory, and they set a price point, and that's what you're paying for. You're paying for a name. You're paying for maybe where it's made. So I want to make a bass I want to make is called a Rickenbacker. So I want to make a Rickenbacker bass, which are usually like the one I want to get is like $1,400. So I want to make it for like $200.
That's cool.
See if that's possible. Yeah.
Yeah, my little one over there is Canadian.
I don't know where my guitar was made. It's a Martin, but it's like a cheaper. Martins can get extremely expensive, and that one is on the lower scale, but it has a fancy name, so magically it has to have a fancy price point.
Oh, yeah.
I got my ukulele at the Naval Exchange in Honolulu, so that was kind of, I had to get it there. I mean, it's kind of a requirement.
So it's authentic.
Yeah. It is.
I was in London one time and I went into this guitar store when I was walking around, and this guy had like a box of like, I think he made a lot of guitars, and he was like, oh, that's the discount box. But like, you would imagine like the bins of CDs at Walmart, but this was a huge cardboard box with like guitars and ukuleles in it. And it caught me. It was the strangest thing. And he was like, oh yeah, there's something a little off with those. So they just go in the box. And I picked out this, I think it was a bass ukulele. It was a bigger ukulele. And I wanted to give it to my oldest son, who was a super baby at the time, and he kept trying to play my guitar. I'm like, ooh, I'll get him into playing music with me. And he just like hit stuff with it, and eventually it broke because he broke it. But it was from like this crazy discount bin, air quotes, in this guitar shop. It was the strangest thing.
Wes, what have you been up to?
I've been putzing around a little bit with my K40 laser. I'm trying to get a quick video out about how to make LED edge lit acrylic signs, which is pretty standard in terms of the laser community. But here's one that I came up with as a demo on my video. Came out
pretty good.
Yeah. So I'm holding up a BB-8 that I laser cut. And it has like a little base that I bought on Amazon. Comes with a little remote so you can like punch in the exact color that you want and fading and all that sort of stuff. And it came out pretty nice.
Did the base come with the LEDs already installed?
It did.
How much is that?
It was like a 2-pack for like around $10.
Whoa.
So pretty good. Yeah.
Did it come with the acrylic too, or did you?
No, I had to buy. I bought the acrylic. I bought like 2 sheets of it, 12 by 12 inches.
Inch acrylic,
and of course the I don't remember what the spec was.
3 millimeter, 5 millimeter,
yeah, 3 millimeter. Yep. No, let's see, it's 5.
Interesting.
Oh, I'm sorry, 3. I lied. It's 3 millimeter acrylic. But yeah, the little bases, the more of them you buy, the cheaper it is. But I think it's around 10-15 bucks for a 2-pack. So very affordable. You can easily crank out a bunch of those for like Christmas and night lights for the kids. And, you know, the acrylic just drops straight in. And so you just have the same footprint for the bottom and you can like swap them out when the kid gets tired of that image. And so then I also did a one by hand or head by hand, one with a base that I lasered using like one of those online box generator things for laser cutters.
Mm-hmm.
And I just to show that you can do like a different size and put the strip of LEDs in there. So hopefully I'll have that out before WorkbenchCon. But yeah, that's what I've been up to. Pretty easy.
Pretty cool.
Thank you guys. Thanks.
Donovan, how about you?
I've been tattooing. That's what I've been working on.
Seen that.
I messed up so bad on the first panel, because the shoes are made up of like 4 different panels. You have the front piece, the 2 side pieces, and the back piece. Because I wanted a shoe that had as much coverage as possible with as few pieces as possible. And those shoes that I found kind of fit that bill. It was just 4 pieces, and so they're large surface areas without a lot of extra stuff that would get in the way. And I, the first panel that I tattooed a couple days ago, I didn't do the stencil right because I wanted to do a stencil because I wanted to get it looking as authentic as possible. So I did the whole stencil and drew like parts of the actual map onto the stencil so that I can get the scale and the proportions and the lettering font and everything right. And I totally messed up. I totally messed up the stencil and like smeared it all over the shoe. And then the ink smeared because I didn't know how to get the needle in the tattoo machine just right. And it's it was a learning experience. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it's a very permanent learning experience. So I learned my lessons, and I've got all but the front piece of both shoes done. And so I'm going to finish those up tonight. And with any hope, I'll have that video out tomorrow because I really want to get that video out so I can start on the mega weapon and get that one done and out before WorkbenchCon next week. But it's been fun.
You gonna do that
as best I can? I don't know.
I think of the stuff that I have to do this week before we leave, and none of it equals that amount of work that you have to do. So I'm impressed.
Yeah, I'm excited. I've got most of my other stuff for WorkbenchCon done. I've got my presentation done. I've got my script written. My PowerPoint has like 100 slides, and apparently that's a lot.
Yeah.
So I need somebody to like critique it for me so I can figure out, you know, how I need to trim the fat, so to speak. But it's I think I'm ready. Aside from the projects I want to get done, I think I've got stickers that I ordered so I can hand up, and I got decals, I've got stuff to trade and barter and give away. I'm working on a media kit to really try and hit the companies that are going to be there, and you know, and try and find sponsorships for this year for more projects that I'm doing. And B&H Photo is going to be there, which I'm really excited about. I was not expecting a company like them to be at WorkbenchCon, but they're going to be there. But I'm really going to try and...
You guys make a regret not going, damn it.
We tried.
Yeah, I know.
But I'm excited. I'm going to try and be as productive with my time there as I can be. So that starts with all the preparation up front. So that's what I've been up to.
Well, I've been messing around with my laser as well. I finally got it going. We're in a position where I think it's usable. I had to replace the mirrors, all three mirrors in my laser unit, because somehow they got burned and one cracked in half. And that was causing all sorts of weird type of effects. And one of them I still haven't solved, but I wasn't able to cut through material. I was able to raster images a little bit, just the quality wasn't there. So once I replaced them with better quality mirrors, I'm assuming they're better quality. I was able to do some cool stuff with it. I started lasering out. I don't have it with me because I left it at work. Kind of like these nameplates are going to sit above the computer for the esports players when they're competing. So I've been doing that, having a lot of fun with that. Now that I have something working, and I don't know, now I get to kind of figure out the more creative things to do with it, and that's what I'm starting to generate and put together. So having fun with that.
I used our laser the other day. I made a tiny version of our Mortal Kombat arcade cabinet that I designed. When we got the gigantic like wall, the decals for the side panels, there was a little more room on the, I don't know, the plotter. So the decal company made little tiny versions. So you made two tiny ones and then one that's, I don't know, probably 2.5 feet tall. We haven't made the 2.5 feet tall one, but I figured out the scale because I have the model in Fusion because I made it, and I figured out that it's like 0.137 scale or some craziness. So I took all that and I was finally able to put all of the pieces on a single sheet of material in a Glowforge, and I cut it all out and I gave that to Anthony so he can put it all together. Nice. And a little tiny desktop version, and a bunch of people are like, oh, you should put a RetroPie in it, put a little LCD screen, and I think that's what Anthony's going to do. Yeah, we have a tiny one. I haven't figured out how to... Well, not, I know how to. I made the thing, but I don't know if I'm going to or what scale the small one, not the tiny ones, but the small one's going to be. That was pretty fun. Lasers are super neat.
I'm having a lot of fun with it.
Yep.
All right, so this week we were talking about the idea of, I think I had to introduce it for the audience instead of the way I talked about it earlier. Kind of looking at a difference in generations compared to how we grow up and looking at how our kids are growing up, the difference of access and, you know, talking about is how important is it to, I don't know if being harder on them is necessarily the case, but making sure that they have some sort of opposition or challenge to make sure that they're encouraged to get better, as opposed to just, receiving positive feedback without any kind of like critical feedback as well. And that's partially how we were talking about it earlier before we started recording.
Well, I think the premise of what you were introducing this topic as is the fact that from your observation, kids nowadays don't have that critical feedback. And so they're how did you put it? They're not overconfident, self-inflated.
A self-inflated view of themselves. Yeah. So I think there's an interesting social media effect, aside from like the negative ones as well. Actually, I don't know. This might even be negative too, where I notice a lot of the younger generations that there's a lot of kind of like glad-handing and positivity, which is really good. But what happens is that there's a huge piece of critical feedback missing that, and I'm not talking about in a negative way, but that motivation for people to get better, almost like a critique. I think that all of us have been in situations and have gone through either training or something growing up where we had to get some sort of feedback that wasn't always pleasant, but that was kind of the kick, or the realization that you had to get better or that your stuff wasn't as good as maybe you thought it was.
What if you never think your stuff is good?
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
imposter syndrome.
I mean, there's that too. But you have to, I mean, you can't think your stuff is terrible. I think that you inherently know that it's maybe not that it's great, but it's okay. But there's a lot more that you could always improve on.
Do you think it's because like before there was a larger barrier to entry to get your stuff seen by even not a huge amount of people, but just even your own peers, like how difficult it was, you know, just to show it to your family, like of let's say 10 or 20 people back in the day, you had to gather them all around at Thanksgiving to show them a VHS tape of you singing at the recital or whatever. And then, you know, that was like your only one chance out of like months. Right. But now everybody has access to being able to post that up and you instantly get an audience. So either, I don't know, I could see that both ways. Like it could be helpful if you actually had honest people constantly giving you correct feedback. But like you're saying, you end up being like an echo chamber of good job, pats on the back. And maybe it doesn't allow you to see how you really are. I don't know.
I think growing up, because we didn't have that avenue for showing what we were doing, I think a lot of people didn't show anything anyways. I think a lot of people just kind of kept it private.
We're
definitely in more of a sharing culture now, for better or worse. I mean, look at what we do. I mean, it's it's inherent to almost everything that we do. And I mean, there's even been times where I've asked you guys where I'll show you something, whether it's a piece of artwork I'm working on or something else, and you say, oh yeah, that's good. And I'm kind of waiting like, okay, but that's not really what I'm looking for. And I'm pointing at you, Donovan, because I specifically wanted your feedback on something. You're like, oh, that's fine. I'm like, that's not – I wanted you to critique it in a way.
I didn't know that's what you wanted.
I thought that was clear, but I didn't verbalize that, so.
Ask Wes.
I was going to say, I don't remember getting anything. Apparently, I have no social filter.
No, I think
just the right amount.
That's right.
I don't know. I think that this is generational, maybe.
But like, is it going to loop back around?
I don't know. I agree with Wes's point, and I'm trying to equate that to kind of what we do, because we now, just like you're saying, have the ability to share all of our stuff, and the feedback that we get is either people that already like what we're doing and are just like cheerleaders,
mm-hmm.
or people that are the complete opposite and are just extremely. See, I don't even like it when people talk about trolls, because feedback, but it's not constructive.
Right.
It is so far unfiltered, like that's bad or terrible or rubs me wrong. So I'm just going to shout angrily at it so that it goes away. Like that's not helpful either. And so if a kid,
can I make an assumption about what you're talking about? So I think in your position, the feedback that you would probably most welcome would be from peers almost on a similar level or doing similar type work. I mean, you've referenced people that you're in contact with. I mean, and the only reason I'm bringing it up that way is because the work that they're doing is of such a high quality that you might appreciate their feedback more.
Well, equating like the kids thing, and it was specifically mentioned about like kids singing in like a talent show, and like some kids are not good at singing. So, with us, like I was welding the other day, not a good welder. I decided on my own, without proper training, without a proper education plan and proper progression, just to jump into something. So if it's bad, somebody's going to go, that sucks, or that's terrible, or why are you doing this? You should throw that thing in the garbage because it's, or somebody's going to go, yay, good for you, keep going. Like, neither of those two things are that constructive or that great.
Or hopeful.
But that, I would say, that's kind of my fault, because I did not go to a teacher who is specifically trained to do the thing and to teach and to give that kind of guidance and to give that constructive criticism, to point out the things that I should have done instead of the things that I ignorantly did wrong. Mm. So it's kind of commiserate on me to be properly educated so that I can be properly taught. Like, seek out a proper educator so that I could receive that feedback when necessary, instead of going like, hi world, look at my thing, listen to me sing, check out my art. Everybody's going to go, like, good for you. You do. You live your best life. You put yourself out there. If you want to weld, if you want to sing, if you want to whatever, like, you just go ahead and do it.
Too many Gary Vaynerchuk's out there.
Are like, that thing sucks. And it's terrible. And you're like, oh my God, people are so mean to me. And I'm like, well, I mean, yeah. But you kind of didn't go to art school, or you didn't go take singing lessons, or I didn't go to a welding school, so I didn't get the feedback that I was hoping, because I didn't really go the proper route. I was armed with confidence, and I purposely bypassed a convention in hoping to shoot a dart at a bullseye the first time.
Okay, I want to retort what you're saying. Like, specifically for what we do, and in the not having been trained and all that other kind of stuff, that is basically our world. We jump into stuff all the time. Like, I have no idea how to tattoo anything, but I'm tattooing a pair of shoes. You're welding. But the thing is, like, we're putting our stuff out there not as a, this is how to do it. We're putting our stuff there is, this is how I did it. We're not going out there like as instructors saying, hey, if you want to weld, you do this and this and that. No, you're just saying, hey, I made this thing and I welded. This is how I did. Like, that's for my stuff. I'm my own worst critic. I know how bad my mistakes look and everything like that. And so, like, I get enough for myself that, like, not negative feedback or whatever you want to call it, trolls or, you know, whatever word you want to use to describe it, really doesn't faze me, because I'm my own worst critic. But the thing is, like, I'm not putting my stuff out there to show people how to do something. That's not my intent. And so having somebody say, whoa, that sucks, is like, that's fine. This is how I made it. It's not how to make a thing. It's just how I made this thing, and I wanted to share it with you. So there you go. Like, you're not going out there putting your stuff out there as saying, hey, this is how to weld. You just welded. Not that you knew how to do it, but you did it anyway. And I think that, not to give too much positive feedback, but I think that should be commendative in and of itself. You go, you live your best life.
Well, the example that Sean gave is that they were having a performance at school and they needed kids to sing. And he was like, some of these kids can't sing. And I guess with them coming up in their confidence and not being able to put out a certain quality of product, but they think that they're great. And so I think maybe the expectation or the incongruency of their greatness with an objective like, no, that sounds bad. You're not as good as you think you are, kind of thing.
So let me flesh that out a little bit more really quick. I forgot who it was that mentioned something about the echo chamber. Wes, I think it might have been you.
Yep.
And I think that's what happens. And especially with music, which I have very little knowledge of beyond the one instrument that I played at one time, a long time ago. And that I think there's a lot of times where you will sing a song to yourself, you become really familiar with the song, and then you get this idea of, oh, I know this song, I know how to sing it. But then once you stand up in front of people and you're expected to perform it, the whole equation changes. And I think that's exactly what happened. And I could see the look on the students' faces after the performance. And I kind of felt for them not because they didn't do a good job, but because they didn't know what was expected, or they didn't have any feedback to bounce off of and actually get better. Because I know for every single one of them, they did not practice. They did not prepare. And I don't know what was going through their head, if they have like a delusion of how good they were, how it was going to go. And there's that piece of it that's missing for a lot of younger generations right now. They're not being tested enough in terms of their real abilities, and I think they're given a false perception of their level of expertise in whatever it is.
Do you think something like Rock Band or Guitar Hero was a detriment to that sort of expectation? Like, you play those games and with all the different filtering and like voice modifications and the hype that it gives you, sort of replicate like a band experience at home. You're like, the virtual crowd's cheering for you, and your other three people around you are cheering you on if you're the vocalist or whatever. And like, yeah. Do you think that helps?
I think
or hurts and gives you like a negative sense of accomplishment.
I'm wondering if all music simulation is hurt that way. You think about the trend of auto-tune that happened, or
sure,
the electronic.
They can fix it in post. Who cares how bad I am?
That's my mantra.
Well, Wes, by that, like, karaoke would have had the same effect on every single person well before.
That's true.
GarageBand or Guitar Hero or anything did.
But karaoke is true. Like, you're actually performing.
That's a performance. That. Yeah.
But it doesn't mean venue. You're doing it well. Doesn't mean that you're on key.
But part of the enjoyment of that is sort of doing it badly, isn't it? Isn't that part of, like, the shtick? I think.
I've never done karaoke.
Somewhat.
I'm not sure how much that was done sober anyways.
Well, Sean, it sounds like you got to have like an American Idol type moment.
I wanted to set it up so we all had our chairs with our backs to them and then turn around if we liked it, but I don't think it was going to go over well. I did this last year too, so it's not my first time going through this, and it was, in a small way, it was kind of nice knowing that what I was hearing is what my coworkers, who are professional musicians and actors and theater people, thespians, I guess, I don't know, that I was hearing what they were hearing. They were able to express it better than I was, but at least I was kind of on par for what we were looking at.
So you said that, like, out of all the people that auditioned or whatever, like, mm-hmm. because of the overwhelmingly bad performances, that you decided not to pursue it or go forward with the plan as usual.
Yeah, it's going to evolve into something else. And just in case I have any students listening, I want to be clear that it's not that the individuals actually couldn't sing. It had to do a little bit more with performance, preparation, a little bit of confidence, and a lack of self-awareness. Because you could hear the melody in their tone and the potential for it, but whatever it was holding them back. And I still think it was a lack of self-awareness and not getting any feedback to help them improve. Because otherwise, your performance and whatever it is that you're working on is just dancing around in your own head. And I think that could go for anything, whether it's you're doing art, animation, music, writing, any form of expression. You need that critical feedback.
Well, I don't want to play devil's advocate in this.
Go ahead.
Well, I kind of am. But having taken away the further opportunity for them to perform in front of other people,
that's where I was trying to
do you think that you've negated your whole
not at all
yeah
not at all I don't think so at all, because really?
Kind of thinking the same thing, because they're auditioning, right? That's pretty much what this was. I mean, there's a lot of nerves, it's a lot of confidence, especially for a young person. Like,
I'll explain why though too. Is because the audition is a singular moment where they either get on the call sheet or they don't. We don't work with them over the next couple of weeks to make sure that they're ready for the performance. It is still all on them.
Does that matter, though, for our discussion? Aren't you perpetuating the problem by not allowing them to get up there and fail in front of a large studio audience or whatever?
Or coach them along as to what they could improve?
Our purpose is not to coach them. They have classes.
Whose is?
Their own. Okay, so I see the confused looks. Let me explain. we don't, well, at least I don't have them in a class. This is not a performance for a class. This is something addition outside, in addition to, you know, what we do, like an extracurricular type of activity. You know, we're not the voice. I'm not a vocal coach. I'm not sitting there helping them through. I might give them a little bit of feedback, and we've gave a lot of them a second chance to perform.
Is there a director for this thing?
Yes.
Is like the choir teacher or the theater
person? She's been working with all of them, but they don't put enough extra time to get better.
Wasn't it then on the performer for like not doing a good job when it comes time to like their final performance? I mean, wouldn't that be the moment that possibly gives them the kick in the right direction from that point on? Or
that's pretty magical thinking, though.
Magical? I mean, no, I'm saying like they're probably going to fail. Isn't that the thing that they need to do? They were all arguing that they should have more of is the opportunity to fail, even if it's in front of like a student body. Like, is that not more beneficial than let them continue on thinking that they're good?
So that's a tough question to answer. It really is. Because there is a public ridicule type thing where, you know, I wouldn't want to see an entire audience cringing at somebody's performance, because who is it benefiting? I don't think it's benefiting anybody in that moment, especially if I had a good indication that that was going to happen.
So you're saving them.
Okay, so let's do like a sports analogy. You have tryouts for a sports team. Do you take the person that had the worst tryout and put them on the team to teach them a lesson?
But if all the people that you had try out were all the people that you had try out, then you would take the best of what you got and put them in. They would be like the little giants equivalent or whatever.
I'm not sure I'd bother coaching.
I mean, whoever has the worst team in the league is still going to go to the games and let them continue to play, right?
Except that, okay, so in that same, in all,
you're coaching them. Right.
And that's not happening here. There has to be a starting level of ability and then get better. Not down here.
I'm thinking so of this you like didn't a, meet like your play. Baseline.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, not that I have any skin in the game, I'm not saying it's you, but like if there's the director, the person who's putting this on, and if there's a theater coach or a choir teacher, like they're no stranger to people who are not great. They're teachers. Like you have to work with people to get them to a certain level. And so if this, like, if you're going to play Shakespeare, and you're like, all right, here's the call sheet, we're like, Jenny's the only person who is good enough to be on this, so Jenny's going to play all of the roles, or we're not going to have a play at all. And so I think that kind of is a... I say this from someone who is not there and doesn't fully understand the scale or the task ahead of you, but it kind of seems like a cop-out.
Okay, so you guys are making a good point in a sense. But I think the essence of what this one specific performance is might be slightly misunderstood. You know, this isn't like putting on a play. You know, if we're going to do a production of Hamlet, there is a consistent practice to get people together, to work together, to make this thing happen. And it's this progressive type thing. In this one instance, and the way it's been done for almost 5 or 6 years now, okay, and I only came into this last year, is the students pick the songs they're going to do, which is a song that they should be working on beforehand and prepping to get better at, because our intention was never to teach them how to do that one song. The breadth of the different performances are a little bit too wide, and that's something that was never intended to take on to individually coach each separate performance.
I think I understand like how this whole topic came to be is the fact that that they're not taking the initiative to prepare themselves to hit that baseline Okay.
Or they don't know that their baseline is so low.
And that's part of the whole point of the topic that I've been trying to say. A lack of self-awareness. And by us telling them that it's not good enough to go on with an actual show, that this is not something that we could be proud to put out, even at that baseline, is that lesson that we're teaching right now.
Did you have them all like stand on the stage and announce this to them?
No, because it's still evolving into something else. The event isn't entirely canceled. It's going to evolve into something else that is more appropriate for...
Sucky people.
No. No, it isn't. See, it isn't just that. It has to do with filling a space. And like I said, it wasn't about the fact that these students couldn't sing.
They just need warm bodies.
Well, no, not just that. It has to do with having a better self-awareness of what their voice is suited to do. And they were trying to sing things that it really isn't. And we typically have this in the gym, and their voice would not fill up that space. So we're going to actually do it in a smaller venue. And it will be a little bit more appropriate that way. And we're going to make some other suggestions in terms of the musical content that they take a look at.
What kind of songs were they... Were they singing? I'm kind of curious now.
I can't remember all of them because some of them I didn't know. One was Paramore. One was Evanescence. I think there was a Bruno Mars song. Some of them I wasn't even that familiar with.
So I know you're trying to amend the show to try to be a little more inclusive for those group of people. And I think I maybe asked it in a weird way, like not getting them up all on the stage and go like, you guys are all too terrible, we're going to change this. But is there some mechanism for you and the other teachers who are there to give them that like one-on-one real feedback?
Okay, so when I answered before, it was answered more from my stance, because I'm not doing it, but the music teachers are.
Okay, because I think with this whole conversation, like, it's happening, them being self-aware, like they have to, are they being made aware?
It's happening in the appropriate environment with the appropriate teacher who should be speaking to those individuals, whether they were playing an instrument or vocal. And because I don't have any of those classes, that's not my expertise. It's happening in those other classes. And those teachers are able to speak more directly to those students in a more effective way than we, you know. Otherwise,
I think that's a hard line to toe, because we're all like, I think all of us are of the generation, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. And so
since when? Our parents never obeyed that.
My parents did. No. That's what I was told. I was told that many times. And so any kind of like outright critique without knowledge to back that up, like, I default to being quiet unless somebody asks me specifically.
You were told that as a kid, but did your parents do that same thing?
Yeah, probably.
Mine didn't.
Yeah. Because I don't think that my parents viewed themselves as an appropriate judge on anything that I wanted to do.
It wasn't just about you, but just like in life, other people.
My parents? No, mine didn't. I don't know. That could be different for everybody.
Okay.
But, I mean, like, I wanted to play music when I was in high school. I was in a band. My band wasn't that great, but we were having a good time. We played talent shows. We played parties. We played a bunch of stuff, and there were probably people that go, man, those guys suck. I'm like, yeah, that may be, but I wasn't playing the Warped Tour. Like, I'm not out to win a Grammy.
Some of those bands suck, too.
I'm out to rock out with my friends and to build skills and to build stuff where there really are no stakes. Like, it's high school, whatever, you know, talent. And there are people that were extremely talented that I'm like, oh yeah, that person rules. Like, that person should go on and get a recording studio or whatever. But if someone would have came out right and told me, like, you are not good at what you're doing, without proper tact and without a little bit of love or a little bit of professionalism behind what they're saying, I think that you could really wreck somebody's self-esteem. And So when people ask my opinion on stuff, especially in the maker community, like, I don't feel like I'm an expert at anything or willing or really able to comment on the quality of someone else's work. So I tend to shut up unless somebody asks me directly. And then I go, you really don't want to know what I think, because it's going to be a hip pocket reaction and not from a place of professionalism or.
Yeah, but why does it have to be that way? Quality. It shouldn't have to be that way, though. You should be able to,
I personally feel like it should be that way.
I mean, you should be able to give critical feedback without crushing somebody.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, but I think without that authoritative thing, like with them, those kids singing, without being a singing coach or a singing teacher or someone that knows a lot about, you know, vocal harmonization, and you go, okay, how did I do? You're like, I didn't like it. I'm like, well, what part didn't you like? I'm like, the part where you sang. So where someone who is an authority, you're like, well, you were a little off key here. You had a little, your vibrato was, or whatever, being able to give more like honed in positive feedback than I would be as just a person who's like, eh.
Well, my situation, that is what's happening, though, because there are professionals that are giving that feedback.
Well, I think that is why I default to the, if I have nothing to say, don't say anything. Is because there are few things in this world that I have the authority to give proper feedback on. Or things I've done in the past because they may have worked for me. They may not be the most scholarly or the most accurate way to do it. So people are like, oh, how is this? Can you tell me what my video was like, or tell me what this thing is like? I'm like, well, I mean, if you're happy with it. Because I might do it a different way. I have no Oscars in my cabinet to be able to tell you why. So, I don't know. I tend to default to being quiet unless somebody really, really, really wants my opinion. And then I'm really, really, really going to tell you my opinion. But I think it's those people that know that their stuff is flawed that are asking honestly for it. And that, to me, is the hardest part, because you don't want to crush people. You don't want to come right out the gate and be like, yeah, that's really ugly. Or it makes me not want to watch it because you're just bad at everything you're doing.
So you don't think there's any value in helping people develop some thicker skin?
Your dress looks great, honey. Practice it every day.
That's a whole different conversation.
That's its own thing.
So you're kind of mixing in tact in that, in a way.
Yeah, I've seen both sides of this, and when
like
I was,
how's my drawing, Daddy? Like you're 4 years old. You're 5 years old. That's pretty terrible, actually. But yeah.
I mean, you went outside the line there and there and there.
Shading leaves something to be desired.
See, I think that's its own thing too.
Yeah,
because I mean, when I look at my own kids, when I look at myself, and how I want my kids. Man, how do I put this? Having had the experiences that I had when I was a kid, really gauge how I want to treat my kids. And I always want to be that cheerleader for my kids, because there's going to be so much crap in this world that's going to try to tear them down. Like, I always want them to know that they have a cheerleader in me to let them know that what they're doing is great. That picture looks fantastic. Like, you did wonderful. Even if they drew outside the line, like, because I want to be that for my kids.
I don't share that same philosophy.
I think that is its own thing, because, yeah, it's hard to know what line to interact with people in a way that you're not coddling them to the point that they don't have thick skin, but you're not being an a-hole at the same time. And, yeah, and it's hard because, yeah. Because it's situational and it's everybody is different, so everybody's going to respond differently. Person may take criticism as, hey, I need to do this better. Whereas another person who doesn't think he did anything wrong is just going to take it personally, and like, it's not going to benefit him at all. It's hard.
I always thought, when I was an instructor, I would teach people how to be a crew member. And then I would have to debrief them on how they did. And my very first question was always, how do you think you did? Because, Donovan, I think you're exactly right. And I'm the same way, that I'm my worst critic. And if someone has something negative to say about my performance, like, yeah, I know that. I've already ran that through in my head. Tonight, I had an audition at, you know, with music tonight. And I'm like, I did this, and this wrong. And everybody's like, no, it sounded good. I'm like, don't do that to me. Don't patronize me. I know I did these things wrong. Go, yeah, you did. Because if you don't think I did, then you're a crappy musician. But any kind of evaluation or feedback that I gave people always started with how do you think you did? And if people are like, I think it was the best thing ever. I did nothing wrong. No notes. Boop. I'm like, well, here's a dose of reality because it was not as good as you thought it was. But usually, I would say for the most part, and I don't know if this goes for the group of kids that you're talking about that may seem disillusioned, they'll usually kind of point out the things that they think they did wrong, and usually more than you as the observer may have noticed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know if that was something that the chorus teacher or whatever did, because they could have been like super nervous, or like I said, they didn't prepare or whatever. And so like tonight, like I gave an audition, I was a little nervous. I'm a grown man and I was nervous. And if they would ask me like, all right, how do you feel you did? I'm like, well, I screwed those things up, but I'm not going to screw those things up again. My bad. Like if we do it again tomorrow, that's not going to happen because I realize it was a deficiency and I'm going to practice to change it. Sorry about that. And I go, okay, the show can go on. And so I don't know if those kids were, like you talk about, self-aware enough to realize that, like, oh, I was just really nervous, or I went too fast, or whatever. And I go, okay, well, then come back and practice, and we can try this again. Again, I don't want to armchair quarterback, like, what happened. But I think allowing people to speak about their own performance first lets you off the hook a little bit.
But the whole point wasn't whether or not they thought they did good. The bigger point was not being prepared ahead of time. And when you don't prepare ahead of time, you shouldn't be surprised not having a good result.
Yeah, I agree.
But that's the whole basis for what happened. I mean, that's, in a nutshell, that's the whole thing.
And that's the problem in and of itself is what you're getting at.
Yes. 40 minutes to establish that.
I still think an audition is a hard place to judge that, because
it is. But look, nervousness aside, you can tell in a performance what attributes to nervousness. Not project, especially in singing, not projecting, a shaky voice a little bit. But there are other things that you can tell in a performance. Oh, you simply weren't prepared. There are certain things you can tell that separate those two things.
I think that's an oversimplification. Because the things I messed up on tonight are day one stuff. I forgot when to start the song. I played the song like 50 times. It wasn't like I was nervous or I was whatever. I had a brain fart because I was nervous. Oh, well. And it was stupid. And exactly. And I would have walked out of there going, well, I don't think I did a great job. So if this were American Idol, I probably wouldn't be going on to Los Angeles, because I feel like I did not do a great job because I had one shot. I prepared. I had one shot. The nerves got a hold of me and I did not perform as I should have.
And you don't think a professional would be able to tell the difference in those things between nervousness and just not knowing your stuff?
I don't know.
I would say a professional would know the difference.
Either way, I wouldn't get on. I wouldn't go on to the next round. But then going like, that was bad. No. I go, well, yeah, I know it was bad for these reasons. Or I could stand my ground and go, no, it was perfect because I'm awesome. Like, well, then it would be commiserate on that person, if they cared enough, that judge or whoever, to go, well, these are the reasons why it was not good. These are the things you need to practice to be at this level, if they care enough. Or they could just be like an internet troll and go like, nah, you suck. You should burn that guitar or burn that whatever because you're terrible. Like, that's not helpful. There needs to be somebody, I think, along the way that is professional enough or cares enough about that person or has the expertise and the ability to teach to go, yeah, well, if that would have been good except for these things. get better at these things, and then come back next year. Don't go jumping off any bridges. Just get better.
Yeah, which is what happened in the individual classes.
People jumped off bridges?
The coaching of getting better, smartass.
It's poor kids. Evanescence is not
worth it. Like, as a follow-up question to your observation, or what?
What?
I don't know. Well, therefore what? Like, your observation that kids, they don't have initiative to prepare to hit that baseline to be good enough to, you know, to do this thing. Therefore, what?
There is no therefore. You just stated a fact.
I know, but like, therefore what? Like, is it like what is our role? Therefore what? Like, therefore what
who is
are
our?
We going to do about that? Or what needs to happen? Therefore, like, that's what I say. Like, therefore what?
Who is our role? Who is us that you're referring to?
Well, we're the ones talking about this topic. Like, you're the one that brought the topic up.
Yes, except I never intended to talk about my students. I wanted to talk about it in terms of our kids.
Oh, I think that's where that's what you wanted to. Like, in terms of my kids are still really little. It's hard because they haven't reached that point where situations and opportunities like this are happening. So it's hard for me to talk about it without being anecdotal about talking about your kids, your high school kids specifically, or, you know.
Yeah, for Samantha, for the most part, her extracurricular activity kind of stuff, she had a very clear way to measure how well she's doing, because she did swimming, like, for swim team. So you can easily determine, like, what place you're in, what your time is. Like, you have an actual metric to compare against and, like, improve on, you know, like, to be able to compare different performances and different meets and whatnot and statistics. You have actual data. Now she's been doing piano for about a year, maybe a little more. So that's going to be a different sort of thing to analyze and kind of deal with. So we haven't done any performances or anything with her yet, or she hasn't had any performances, but it's sort of like an objective sort of performance, right? Compared to something that's measurable, like a race. So I'm not sure how she'll do objectively.
With our homeschool kids, we can take the time to, like, kind of see what they're interested in, and then gear a lot of their education, or not a lot, but, like, gear a healthy portion of their education toward that thing. And then it just kind of be wrapped up. So my son likes to draw. And so we got him a lot of books on how to draw different types of characters. And it's beyond now, like, he has little marker drawings. Like, he's starting to draw comics. He told me he wants to be a cartoonist. Like, so I'm going to get you a book with a bunch of comic panels. And we're going to talk about how to draw those comic panels. Like, this is a standardized way to follow a story. And so I think fostering and going outside of their own limited knowledge of the thing that they're interested in. If it is singing, they're going, like, great, I'd be a singer. And then they just kind of keep singing in the room or in the shower. And you're like, it's not bad. It's not that great. Well, then I think as a parent, like, that's on me to, like, all right, well, let's go to the next step and go get you some singing lessons. If that's something that you want to pursue, it's going to take work to be good at it. And if you care enough to get in front of a group of people, then you should prepare and be good at it. And I think the preparedness preparedness is relative. There's what that kid thinks they are prepared to do, and then what a group of judges think they should be able to do. And it may not be right for them right now, but keep practicing and keep doing that thing. And I think as a parent, being able to identify in your kid something that they're interested in and then giving them a venue to get properly better at it.
Interested or showing a talent for, or yeah.
Yeah, because like the Donovan, like you're saying about drawing, like they show you a drawing, that is their max effort, hopefully, if they actually care. If it's just, if they're coming to you going, look at this thing that I made, like they are so proud that they made that. So in some way, you can judge that that is their max effort or max quality output. And so like, yeah, that's wonderful. How do I do that plus? How do I help you level up? And so whatever it is, I think it's on us as parents to be able to give those opportunities.
Yeah, yeah, Grant's been drawing a lot lately. Kind of just started out of, he didn't show really any interest in like coloring for a while. He's more into like building stuff like Lego and other types of building materials. But in the last couple weeks, he's shown an affinity to coloring books and stuff, and we had them scattered across the house, you know, when Samantha was kind of first getting into that, and we didn't have like a good set of here are your crayons, here's a bunch of books. It was just kind of, you know, life scattered them throughout the house. So over last week I ordered a Marvel comic book and a Justice League comic book in like a nice Crayola set of like all the markers, all the pencils, all the things, and like it just arrived I think 2 days ago, and every moment he's had, he's been at the kitchen table with this like giant briefcase thing opened, like coloring stuff. Like he did like Thanos and like the Infinity Gauntlet and all the little stones, and he was like trying to determine, you know, what colors were in the right order and all this. So he's 5 years old, five and a half, and so like, yeah, that's awesome. Let's get on that. Let's keep at it. Of course, Samantha was like, hey, how come he got all this giant box of brand new crayons and, you know, markers and all this stuff? I'm like, well, you had all that stuff already. It's somewhere. You can go gather it up before, you know, gather it up and try again, or you can share in these new markers, this new treasure trove of art supplies that you never had access to before in one concise box. But yeah, he's been enjoying it. It's fun to see him get into it. He was like, oh, can I finish this Deadpool drawing tomorrow after school? I'm like, yeah, buddy, I'll put it right here. So he's getting into it.
Oh, that's cool. I'm all for teaching kids how to draw.
Not sure where else to go with the conversation now.
We're in agreement.
Yeah, I do want to address one comment that was in the live chat, though, from Broken Antler Workshop. He brought up a scenario that a colleague would give opinionated photo feedback for a photography group. And I want to kind of clarify that the type of feedback that I'm talking about is critical feedback, and that's not, I don't consider that the same thing as opinionated feedback. Because an opinionated feedback is simply, I don't like that because I don't like that subject or I don't like that thing. That's not what I'm talking about at all. The kind of feedback I'm talking about is, and it's going to vary depending on what the discipline is, whether you're talking about composition or color or something else, where the feedback is intended to help the individual get better during their next attempt. And that's the kind of feedback that I'm talking about. I have to do it 50, 60 times a day with my students in the different disciplines, whether it's coding or whether it's animation. I have students who they're putting together portfolios right now in animation, and I'm having them rework all their old assignments and trying to show them what is worthy of a portfolio, especially what would be expected at the end of the class. And so I will tell them, okay, that's good. Now do this. That's good. Now try making this change or test this and see how you feel about it. That's critical feedback to get them to become more self-aware of what's going on and the difference of between what is considered more like professional level work, because that's the push in the program, and just somebody drawing for fun in their room. There's a clear difference between the two. And so it's not the same as opinionated feedback. I don't like a lot of the content that they draw. I may not personally like a character. I never tell them that because it doesn't matter. You know, is it still adhering to the rules of character design? Is it still appealing? Is it, you know, these different things? And if you're the one giving the feedback, you have to be somewhat objective and take your own emotion out of it and take a look at the thing for what it is, or the art of it, depending on, like I said, what the discipline is. That's the difference of between the opinionated feedback and the critical feedback I'm talking about.
Well said.
Just so people don't think that I'm completely harsh on all my students, and I'm probably harder on my kids in a lot of ways.
Do you have students that are trying to get into the like the field of animation and things like that?
I do. I have a total of almost 60 animation students right now, split between two classes. My advanced class has about 22. And out of those 22 students, I have about 8 that with a little bit more training probably could work for a studio. They're that good. And I have a couple that in like a year or two, they will blow me out of the water. They're just that talented. You know, everything that I've learned is all procedural. It's like I'm following a math formula every time I do drawing or animation. These kids are artists. It's the way I would describe them and their being. Whereas I'm this is all learned for me in a simple passion. It's not talent in the same way at all.
That's cool.
What do you guys have been geeking out about?
Well, based on our conversation last week, somebody recommended that I look up Christy McConnell. I don't have Netflix, and so I couldn't go watch the show, but she put out a behind the scenes on her YouTube channel called The Mind of Christine McConnell, and holy cow, I have been binge watching all of her stuff, and she inspires me to want to be a better YouTuber because it's her stuff is so good.
Who is she? Give a description of who she is.
She is a baker. She makes a lot of food related material, but she'll make like a gingerbread house that looks like a mansion and weighs 500 pounds. Or she'll make, I think her thing for Valentine's Day was themed on Stranger Things. So everything, she'll make all these like atypical Valentine stuff, but make it look like it's from the world of Stranger Things or incorporate Stranger Things into it. And all of her stuff is amazing. She had a show on Netflix, I think, that was called From the Mind of Christine McConnell. And she actually partnered with the Henson Corporation and had puppets that were part of the show, and they would create these theme thing. It's just amazing. All of it is just fantastic. And like I said, she inspires me to want to be a better YouTuber, and I've been thoroughly enjoying watching all of the stuff on YouTube. It's just incredible.
It's cool. I am geeking out about this little guy right here. I'm holding up a small Polaroid cube camera up if you're looking at the YouTube feed. I had a GoPro for a very short time, not very long. I think it was a GoPro 1. I didn't really like it that much. But I've wanted like some additional cameras for like mounting inside a machine like the laser cutter or something else. And I found these on Amazon. They're down to $15 a piece right now for HD. So I bought 2 of them. And I just recorded some footage inside the laser cutter, which I haven't taken a look at yet. It takes a micro SD. There's no wireless. So it's kind of like mount it and pray that you're getting the shot that you want. But the angle of view is like 120. So pretty wide angle of view. There's a good chance that you're going to get almost everything that's in front of it. It's just really hard to set the blocking for the shot if you want a certain design, but I don't think that's really the intention. So I got 2. There's a nice little strong magnet on the bottom, so you can mount it a lot of different places. It comes with a rubber sleeve, and I don't know. It's kind of fun, and I'm curious to see what other kind of weird things I could do with it. So that's what I'm geeking out about, some new gear.
I just checked out Christine McConnell's YouTube channel, and other than her being a tall, slender female, Donovan, I could see your videos trying to kind of go that way. Telling a story while making something. Yeah,
yeah,
I could see where
they're amazing.
What am I going to get about? Workbench Cons next week, and I get to hang out with 2 of the 3 of you. That'd be fun. Oh, do you guys know a guy named Ethan Carter?
Yeah. Ethan Carter Designs.
I saw a bunch of people like getting an X-Acto knife in the mail from Ethan Carter that he like leather wrapped. He does a lot of leather goods, and I just checked out his Instagram page yesterday, and he has a lot of really clean design, a lot of good stuff. And I bought one of those X-Acto knives, so hopefully it'll be here soon. So it's my favorite tool of all time, and he made it better. So I would say go check out Ethan Carter Designs.
Yeah, I was going to say Workbench Con as well. Gearing up for that is definitely exciting. Besides that, I've been watching Star Trek Picard, which has been all right. Not super geeking out about it anymore, but yeah, kind of slow week for the geeking out.
Alrighty then. Well, you know, we'd love to hear from all of you. This is definitely a different topic than we usually tackle, and maybe even hit home for a lot of people that are, they're, you know, dealing with either accepting criticism or, you know, looking at how they try to, you know, help their kids kind of like contend with those different things. So if you'd like to, you know, ask a question, contribute to the show in any way, just go ahead and go to our website, makinggeeks.com. There on the contact page is where you could list all that information. And if you check out the homepage of the site, you can listen to all of our past episodes in the browser right there on makinggeeks.com.
And if you want feedback from us individually, you can find us online, on social media, more specifically. Josh can be found over at Josh_makestuff. Wes could be found at Geeksmithing. Sean could be found at Geek Builders. And I could be found at Once Upon a Workbench.
And we'd like to take this opportunity to thank our patrons over at patreon.com/makinggeeks for keeping the lights on here at the show with their financial contributions. We definitely appreciate it. And I'd like to give a special shout out to our top patron, C3D Prop Shop, who we'll see next week at WorkbenchCon. Thank you so much for your support. See you soon.
And if you want to hang out in the live chat on YouTube, it happens every Thursday around 9:30 Eastern Standard Time here in the States. And the show is published on Saturdays to your podcast player of choice. So thanks for hanging out with us. We hope you have a fantastic week.
Later, everybody.
See ya.
Take care.
Oh, you're on like the chorus already.